Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. I appreciate you joining us here today. Last week, Jodel Onstott taught a class for me. I had been traveling, got back in, so that worked out great. I appreciate it, Jodel. Thanks for covering for me. Prior to last week, I was teaching on a series, basically, leading up to Shavuot and the idea or the commemoration of the giving of the law called Matan Torah in Judaism. And I'm writing on this subject now, so all of this is fresh on my mind. Remember, the book of Malachi ends, chapter 3, verse 22 in the Hebrew Bible, chapter 4, verse 4 in the English Bible. Remember the Torah of Moses. So I'm thinking about this, especially that which was communicated at Horeb. So Malachi 3:22 talks specifically about the statutes and judgments that were given at Horeb to all of Israel. So leading up to this point, I've covered a class called The Testimony. I did a class on The Testimony about a month ago. And then I followed up with a class called The Tablets, Take Two. And then the last class that I taught, bringing us up to the present, was a class that I called Ikavod, The Glory is Missing. Now, last Sunday on the Jewish calendar was Shavuot, the festival known as Pentecost by many. It's the festival that is associated in Judaism with the giving of the 10 words, the giving of the testimony, as we say. And so here we are, a week past Shavuot. In other words, if we were several thousand, if we were 3,500 years ago, if we were at the time, and we were a week past the giving of the Torah at Sinai, that's where we are today, right? So I want you to understand that we are in the period of time where this class is going to be relevant and I think timely, because I want to make an association. I want to talk to you today about something that I have really been thinking about of late. A reminder of sorts, lest we forget and we fail a test. Because actually, what happened in the days of Moses and the children of Israel, shortly after the giving of the Torah, they failed a test. And so I think it's essential that we cover this subject matter again. And just to make sure, I'm sure you're okay. You're probably fine. You're probably okay. But I just want to make sure, because they thought they were okay. Have you ever wondered how it was that the children of Israel could have turned so quickly from the way? I want you to think about this. I'm talking about very quickly they had left Mitzrayim. They had left what is called the iron furnace, where the children of Israel had been enslaved for several hundred years. When they left watching and witnessing a series of plagues. Let's call them, the Hebrew, the word is a blow, like a strike. Several blows, one right after the other, that were phenomenal. It referred to these awesome wonders, this awesome display are called signs and wonders. The children of Israel leave the land where they had been captive, where they had been slaves, servants of Pharaoh. They leave in this awesome display. Clearly, God is defeating the gods of Egypt. They leave the land of Egypt. They pass through Yom Suf, the Red Sea. And they don't just pass through. Let me explain. I know you know this, but I don't want anybody to miss anything. The water congealed on either side. I like to imagine it like the Disney movie with the fish swimming along and you can see them. And not only did they pass through with walls of water on either side, they passed through dry ground. They weren't wading through mud up to their knees. They saw these miracles. They walked through. They witnessed as they got to the other side, the waters come crashing down. Exodus 15, the song of the sea. Miriam puts it this way, the horse and the rider thrown into the sea. So not only are they delivered and saved alive, but their enemies are utterly destroyed. They saw these things. They witnessed them firsthand. Then they stood at the foot of Sinai. And this was the most incredible event in all of human history. Moses will say in Deuteronomy 4, think back from the beginning of time, from the first man, all the way up into the present. Has anything like this ever happened again? It was dark, it was ominous. Clouds and thick darkness, thunder probably greater than you've ever experienced, greater than we can probably imagine, lightning, fire, the sound of a shofar so intense, it says it grew louder and louder and louder. And they heard a voice speaking from the midst of the fire. And they lived about it. They lived after it. This was the giving of God's testimony allowed to an assembly of people, according to the Torah, 603,550 males, and that doesn't count the women and children. And they witnessed this. Everything that I just described, and more. And in a few short weeks, they were making a molten image. They were worshiping the molten image. They were sacrificing to this molten image. And they were referring to the molten image as Yehovah, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. This is your God. Just a few short weeks. Now here we are, 3,500 years later, as Torah faithful people. I want to think about this. None of us saw what they saw. None of us heard what they heard. None of us experienced what they experienced. They did, and they failed the test. The question is, are we okay? Or could we possibly make the same mistake they did? Because it's beyond me how someone who witnessed those things could in any way make a mistake and get off the path. But it says they turned quickly from the way that they were commanded. This is a very interesting thing to me. I guess the thing that I want to begin with is this. What happened? What happened that they could get off the way, and how did it happen? Because if we understand what happened and how it happened, then possibly we're in a better place to avoid the same pitfalls. Does that make sense? I think it does. All right, I've got a biblical answer. I've got a biblical answer for what happened, and I want to present that to you today for your consideration, because it's something we ought to look at, sort of a self-check, if you will, just to make sure. So Exodus chapter 20 is a story, just like Deuteronomy 5. Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5 actually record the 10 words, the conveyance of the 10 words from heaven. And what I want to do is I want to start in Exodus chapter 20 and cover the Horeb event from Exodus 20, the giving of the 10 words, Matan Torah, because I think that within the text that I'm going to cover today, we're going to gain some insight into what could possibly have happened. What little thing did they do wrong that led them down the wrong path? Again, these are the people that saw it, experienced it, lived it. They were in trembling, and they made a mistake. Any of you shaking in your boots right now? Probably not. So the potential then is that we could make a mistake as well. So go with me to Exodus 20, Exodus chapter 20. And now the verses are different in the English and the Hebrew, so I'll try. Hopefully I know what the numbers are in the English Bible. But if you go to Exodus 20, beginning in verse 15, I believe it's verse 18 in the English Bible, Exodus 20, verse 18. In the Hebrew Bible, Exodus 20, verse 15. It's right after the giving of the 10 words, after the last, quote-unquote, commandment, okay? So I want you to listen to this, verse 15. And all the people perceived the thunderings and the lightnings and the sound of the shofar and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they were shaken, and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, "You speak with us, and we'll hear. But don't let God speak with us, lest we die." And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not." And then it says, and the people stood far off. Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Now, this is right after this awe-inspiring event. The people are so shaken that they make a request to Moses. They said, "Let's do it this way. You go talk to God, and whatever he tells you, you come back and tell us, and we'll do it. Just see if you can't work it out where we don't have to experience this again." Now, a lot of people bring this up, and they go, "Oh, this is a problem." You know, they request not to hear from God anymore, and people make a big deal out of that. Jehovah says, "I've heard what they said, and they're right." Jehovah's all for this new arrangement. In fact, if we follow this story on through, and by the time we get to Deuteronomy 18, that becomes the method whereby Jehovah will communicate with his people through the agency of a prophet. There are other passages in the Torah that describe the same. Numbers chapter 12 is one example. That God would speak to the prophet would convey the message of Jehovah to the people. This particular person, this messenger, this prophet will speak the words of Jehovah, whatever he says. Okay? "So you speak, Moses, and we'll listen." Now, the interesting thing is that Moses tells them the whole purpose of this demonstration is to instill an awe and a fear in the people to prevent them from sinning. That's why he does it. He says, the Elohim, it says, Elohim has come to test you, right? It's a test. Because its whole purpose is to prevent sin. Now look at verse 19. But by the way, after what I just read, that's set off by white spaces. And then it begins again. And Jehovah said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I talked with you from heaven. You shall not make with me golds of silver, neither shall you make for yourself gods of gold. All right, so after the awesome display, after the people are full of fear and awe and they make the request not to hear from God anymore, the first thing Jehovah tells Moses is, make sure that they don't associate me with gods they make. Right? First thing out the gate, you had one thing. Sounds a lot like Gan Eden. Sounds a lot like the garden. Just don't eat from this tree. You can do all this other stuff, but don't do this. It's something that will echo throughout the pages of Holy Writ. This idea that you are not to make something tangible, physical, into and associate that object with the one that spoke from heaven. Notice he says, you perceived all of this. You heard the voice. Deuteronomy makes it very, very clear. You didn't see anything in the form. In other words, you heard the words. So don't make anything. One rule. No idols. None. And then after this, we get a list of various commands and statutes and rules and judgments and laws, all these different Hebrew words, from this verse all the way through. If you started reading right here, we're not going to do this morning. We should, but we're not. You read all the way through the end of chapter 20. You go into chapter 21, you read all the way through 21. You go to chapter 22, you read all the way through chapter 22. You get to chapter 23, you read all the way through chapter 23. You get no dialogue between the people and Moses, the people and God, God and the people, Moses and the people. It's all laws. Last thing we heard from the people, you go talk to God. Whatever he tells you, you tell us, and we'll listen. Then, law, 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 judgment, statute, rules. Now, when you open up chapter 24, something happens. Go with me to Exodus chapter 24. Exodus 24. And I want to paint a picture by reading the first four verses. Exodus 24. And he said to Moses, come up to Jehovah, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and bow down afar off. And Moses alone shall come near Jehovah. But they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. And Moses came and told the people all the words of Jehovah and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which Jehovah has said we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of Jehovah, rose up early in the morning and built an altar and so forth. So understand, Moses is called up. He records all the words that Jehovah spoke. He reads them. Moses came and told the people all the words of Jehovah and all the judgments, and the people all said, almost like together, "We will do." This is the first time we've heard from them since Exodus chapter 20. Right? I just want you to see the way, because in order to understand what I'm trying to figure out is and I'm trying to help us all figure out what happened from Exodus chapter 20, the shaking, the nervousness, the fear, the awe, the respect, the "we're going to do it," and chapter 32 where they're making a molten image. Look, these are the children of Israel. This isn't some pagan tribe. Don't get confused. These are the same people that God says in Exodus 19, "You're going to be a kingdom of priests, a royal priesthood. You're going to be this. You're going to be my segula, my special people." This is Jehovah's special people. From the time of Exodus 20 until we get to 32, next thing you know, they're praying to a cow, saying, "This is the God that brought us out of Egypt," right here. Something went wrong. I'm just trying to figure it out. It sounds good so far. They said, whatever he says, we're going to do it. Moses, you speak to God, whatever he tells you, we're going to listen. And here again, look, we're going to do it. Now look down. So in verse 3 again, notice the language. I want you to pay close attention to the language. The truth is in the details. People say something else is in the details. The truth is in the details. That's what's in the details. All right, so we're going to listen. Then they say, "We're going to do." And now, again, they say, whatever, verse 3, whatever, all the words which Jehovah said, we're going to do it. Now look down at verse 7. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people. And they said, here they go again, "All that Jehovah has said, we will do, and we will listen." Now, your English translation may read differently. It may say obey, we will do, and we will obey. But literally what it says is, "We will do, and we will listen." Now, there's a midrash. A midrash, a saying in Jewish literature, that takes this verse and paints it in a very positive light. They say, this is so, look, here, the people so trusted Jehovah that they agreed to do no matter what, even before they heard it. You see, because "do" is mentioned before here. So that's like, Moses, stop. Whatever he says, we'll do it. We don't even need to listen. We're going to do it. We're telling you we'll do it even before we hear it. And you know what the Midrash does? Golf clap. This is good. This is great. These people were so faithful. So faithful that they agreed to do it without even hearing it. Sounds good. And so then, with this confidence that they've said they're going to do it, they're going to do it even before they hear it, Moses puts his right-hand man in charge. He takes the high priest, his brother, Aaron. Remember, Exodus 7, Exodus chapter 4 and Exodus chapter 7. This was a team. Moses represents God. Aaron represents the prophet. We're told in the earlier chapters in Exodus 4 and Exodus 7, look, Moses, you are going to be Lelohim. For God. You're going to be for God. Aaron's going to be your prophet. So he, representing God in the scenario for the practical purposes, he leaves the prophet in charge. Look, read. Let's look at verse 14. And he, Moses, said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we come back to you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matter, let him come to them." I'm leaving Aaron and Hur here. I've got to go up and talk to Jehovah. If you have any issues while I'm gone, just see my man, Aaron. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, what else can he do? Who else is he going to leave in charge? He's trusted Aaron. Meanwhile, on the mountain. All right? We get more laws and rules and statutes. So I want you to imagine two theaters, two different scenes, if you will. On the ground, Moses says, "Aaron and Hur, you have it. I'm going up." He goes up. We don't know what's happening on the ground yet. Moses goes up. The cloud comes down and settles for a week thick. Now, we've been a week past Sinai, so it's like now. It's a full week, and he's still in the cloud. We don't know what's going on down there. Surely everything's okay. And if you have any problems, I told you, go to Aaron. So what we get is that while Moses is on the mountain, he's going to be there for 40 days and 40 nights. And in the process of his time and communication with Jehovah, he's going to get what's called the Tavnit delivered to him, the pattern. Everything about, in Hebrew, it's Truma and Tetzaveh, these two Torah portions. Roughly from chapter 25, from the point of chapter 25, it's a description of everything that will be created to make a holy place where Jehovah can dwell in the midst of his people. That's what Moses is doing. He is receiving the pattern that's going to allow the creator of all heaven and earth to be in the midst of this holy Segula people. They're down below, we just have to assume that they're worshiping Jehovah down there. They're good, righteous, holy, fearful people. I mean, what else could be going on? They just saw these things. Meanwhile, up on the mountain, he's getting this pattern. Look at chapter 29. In other words, if you go through chapter 25, you read through chapter 26, you read all the way into chapter 27. This is all like, you're going to make this, and you're going to make this, and make sure you do it according to the pattern. You're going to make this, and this is part of this tabernacle, this Mishkan. You go through chapter 27, you go through chapter 28. You're still telling him all the instructions. He's giving him the pattern. Get into 29, same thing, talking about the priesthood and so forth. Now, I want you to go to chapter 29, and I want to pick up in verse 42, the tent of meeting before Jehovah, where I will meet you to speak there to you. And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and it shall be sanctified by my glory. So he's been describing this holy place. Remember chapter Exodus 25, verse 8 and 9, Jehovah tells Moses, "Make for me a mikdash, a holy place, where I will dwell in the midst of my people." So here he's telling him, verse 44, "And I will sanctify the tent of meeting in the altar. I will sanctify also both Aaron and his sons to minister to me in the priest office." You know, Aaron, who's down there handling up on business, he's going to be the one that I'm going to make holy. "And I will dwell among the children of Israel and will be their God. And they shall know that I am Jehovah their God that brought them out of the land of Egypt, that I may dwell among them. I am Jehovah their God. Notice the way this ends. They're going to know, based on everything we've just covered, Moses, in these past 40 days, that I am Jehovah their God. And then, after that, we get into chapter 30. Chapter 30 talks about incense and herbs and spices and oils, all about making this place not only holy, but smell nice. Everything is perfect. And he talks about in chapter 31, I'm going to take a person by the name of Bezalel, I'll assign an associate to work with him whose name is Aholiab, and they're going to build everything that I've just described in all of its details. And oh, by the way, make sure to keep my Sabbaths. And then there's a white space. Now, at this white space, after chapter 31 and verse 17, I want us all to take a deep breath. Because everything that we've just talked about is what's happening in the mount, what's being communicated to describe the perfect, holy place where Jehovah can be with his people, this sanctified, holy group, this priesthood for all the nations of the earth, the special treasure. Meanwhile, down below, something else is happening. In chapter 31, chapter 31 and verse 18, the white space separates what I just talked about. And now it says in verse 18 of chapter 31, and he gave to Moses, when he had made an end of speaking to him upon Mount Sinai, two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written with the finger of God. Now, the last thing that we heard from the people about 40 days ago was, we'll do it and we'll hear it. We're going to do it before we even listen. We're so faithful. We trust God so much. That's what they're saying. It's been 40 days. The people that were redeemed from the iron furnace, I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. This people. Not another people. I'm not talking about the Amalekites or the Amorites, the Hittites, Girgashites, and none of those. I'm talking about the Israelites, the redeemed ones, the ones that received the Torah, the ones who promised to do before they listened, turned quickly from the way. This turning from the way is used 11 times in Scripture. And guess who it's talking about every time? Not the Hittites or the Girgashites or the... Yep. It's our group. Our holy nation. Today's talk I've titled, While the Ink Was Still Wet. Now, we don't think that God wrote with ink, but you know this expression. The ink was still wet when the other theater is playing a very bad movie. Look at chapter 32 of the book of Exodus. I want to read the first six verses. But I want you to know that our English Bibles and even Hebrew Bibles begin a new chapter with these words. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down, that's not the way the ancient scribe set this up. The real story begins right above it. And he gave to Moses, when he had made an end of speaking to him upon Mount Sinai, two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone, written with the finger of God. And when the people saw, I want you to know these are together, meaning God is the ink is still wet. He's handing the tablets to Moses, and simultaneously, watch this, the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain. The people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said, "Up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For this man Moses, who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we know not what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the gold earrings, which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, of your daughters, and bring them to me." And all the people broke off the gold earrings, which were in their ears, brought them to Aaron. He received the gold at their hand. He fashioned it with a graving tool. He's doing this. Yup. You got it. We have enough more earrings. Bring more earrings. Keep them coming. I'm over here working. You guys gather around and watch me. He received it, fashioned it with a graving tool, made it into a molten calf, and they said, "These are thy gods, O Israel," which in Hebrew can be, "These are your gods." You know, is it plural? Is it singular? People can debate. "Which brought you up out of the land of Egypt, and when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, 'Tomorrow is a feast to Jehovah.' They rose up early on the morning and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to disport themselves," it says. They're having a hi-ho time. These are the same people that said, whatever he says, we're going to do it and we'll listen. Same group says now, again, this is the next thing we hear from, "We don't know where this Moses is. Up, make us some gods." Then they say, these are the gods, after he, remember Moses said, "Look, if you have any problems, just go to Aaron. He'll take care of it." Oh, he took care of it, all right. Next thing we hear from is, "Make us gods." Something's missing here. We've missed something. How do you go from what the trembling people agreeing to do before they listen to, "Look, it's been a month and a half. Moses could be dead for all we know. Would you make us a god?" What happened? Look at verse 7. Look, now let me tell you, this is a white space. You got to go back up to the mountain. So this, the way it's written, Moses receives the tablets from Jehovah. Then that it's like it flips. Spielberg could do a good job of this. It flips over. You watch this, "Hey, make us gods" thing. And then you hear Jehovah back. Now we're back up on the mountain. He says, "Go, get thee down, for your people which you brought up out of that land of Egypt have become corrupt." "They turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. And they have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed to it, and have said, 'These are thy gods, O Israel, which have brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" This, remember the thing that he said after they were so filled with awe before Moses goes up was, whatever you do, don't make a graven image. Now, had it been someone in the camp that was slow or that was just wicked that made it, that'd be one thing. But the religious leader, the head guy, makes it. I mean, he is complicit. He's not only is he part of the crime, he's the main criminal. This is not good. This is not good at all. In four ways, they've corrupted themselves. In other words, Jehovah says they've corrupted themselves and they've turned quickly. Remember, this turning quickly occurs 11 times. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to hit some of them. But here's the four ways that they've corrupted themselves. They made a molten calf. That's bad enough. That's bad enough. That's the violation right there. But they take it further. They bowed down to it. Like some translations call it worship. But it means they bowed down to it, like they're praying to this golden cow. They offer sacrifices, and to add insult to injury, they say that the cow is the same Jehovah that brought them out of the land of Egypt. They're just stacking these crimes up. The holy people are. Verse 9, by the way, Jehovah said to Moses, I've seen this people, and behold, it's a stiff-necked people. Let me alone. I'm going to take them out. Stiff-necked people. That's used 8 times in Scripture. 8 times, stiff-necked people. Look it up. You know who it's referring to all 8 times? Yep, you guessed it. Not the Hittites. The chosen people. That's right. The ones, the segula, my own special treasure. Stiff-necked. Okay, and just to make sure, every bit of this rebellion takes place under the headship of the high priest, under the headship of Aaron, Moses' brother. Moses is up getting the holy tablets. Aaron is leading the greatest rebellion ever against Jehovah. Okay, now go with me to Deuteronomy 9. Deuteronomy is Moses' firsthand account. chapter 9, verse 12. This is going to tell us, Moses is relating this. And Jehovah said to me, notice first person, arise, get thee down quickly from here, for your people, which you brought forth out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They are quickly turned aside out of the way which I commanded them. They've made them a molten image. Now, Deuteronomy's version only relates that one crime. It doesn't say they burned, they bowed and worshiped to it, they sacrificed it, and they've called it Jehovah. It's enough. Moses just relates simply, they made a molten image, right? They just made this false god. And so now in verse 13, he also says, relates that Jehovah calls this people a stiff-necked people. Now look down at verse 16, chapter 9, verse 16. And I looked, now this is him. Now he, first of all, he takes the tablets. Jehovah said, get down quickly, because the people that you brought out of Egypt have turned quickly from the way which I commanded them. Take these tablets and go. Moses takes the tablets. He runs down the mountain. Or it doesn't say he runs. He quickly goes down the mountain. I assume he's kind of trotting. By the time you get to verse 16, he says in verse 15, he's got the tablets in his hands. And I look, verse 16, and behold, you had sinned against Jehovah your God and had made a molten calf. Then he qualifies it by saying this. You had turned aside quickly out of the way which Jehovah commanded you. Can you imagine? Last thing he tells them before he goes up, don't make any images. Got any questions? Talk to Aaron. Aaron said, I'll make an image for you. Let me get the tools out of my tent. I got an engraving set. Go to chapter 11. Chapter 11. Okay. And if we start in verse 26, chapter 11, behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey the commandments of Jehovah your God, which I command you this day. A curse if you do not obey the commandments of Jehovah your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods which you've not experienced or known. So in other words, what this in Deuteronomy in chapter 11 is relating consequences for behavior. Blessings, if you listen to the commandments, right? And a curse, if you turn from the way which I'm commanding you to make other gods is specifically called out. So it's not like this is a singular occurrence. Quite often in Scripture, predominantly, whenever it talks about turning from the way, it has to do with false worship. In other words, the way is the way you ought to go. The way is what God calls justice and righteousness, the way of Jehovah. It's first conveyed in Genesis 18, verse 19, where God talks to Abraham and tells him that his descendants will pass this along, the way of Jehovah, to do justice and righteousness in the earth. But what it's not is to get off the way, which is always associated with false worship. So it's a curse if you don't listen. And you know what? If you don't listen, the implication is that you will be following other gods. Now, this is a real big, important point here. It's subtle. False worship can be very tricky. It can almost look like you go, well, you know, we're calling this molten image, we're calling it Jehovah. It's same. That look, okay, I got an image, but the image is to direct my energies of spirituality towards the unseen God. I've made this object. It's not that I'm praying. I want you to get this. It's not that I'm praying to the statue or the representation of my God. It's just helping me focus my spirituality towards the unseen realm. It's innocent. It's not innocent. Okay, go to Deuteronomy 13. Deuteronomy 13, and I want to read verses 1 through 6. Every matter which I command you, guard and do it. Guard and do it. Lo tosef, don't add unto it, and lo tigra, and don't take from it. All right? Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Guard and do it. Everything that I'm telling you, guard it and do it. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Very important. Now, look, he's going to give you some ways that you might not guard it. By the way, to guard means don't add to, don't take away from. But look, it's going to be tricky. You got to be ready. You got to be ready. You could get pulled off. I'm telling you, the people that were there when the walls of water had fish swimming by them made this mistake, and I don't want you to. If there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, I'm talking a smooth-talking, clean-shaved, suit-wearing preacher that reads you like a book, that tells you things that only you would know. a miracle-working snake oil salesman of a guy. You got to watch it, because they might lead you astray. Even if what he says comes to pass, saying, let us go after other gods which you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for Jehovah your God puts you to the proof. Here we go with that test again. To know whether you love Jehovah your God with all your heart, with all your soul, you shall walk after Jehovah your God and fear him and keep his commandments and listen to his voice, and you shall serve him and hold fast to him, and that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death because he's spoken to you to turn you away. Here's that turn from the way part. To turn you away from Jehovah your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage, to thrust you out of the way which Jehovah your God commanded you to walk in, so you shall put evil from your midst. We're talking about people who speak rebellion. Now look, this rebellion can come in a nice, pretty package. You know, somebody might tell you, you know, Dave, I know something. The Lord told me to tell you this, and it might even come to pass. I mean, don't expect it from me, but I mean, it could happen, right? And then you go, oh, man. And I say, look, let me tell you how I did that. I've put my trust in God, and let me show you how I worship God. Come into my shrine. Let me show you. Don't get nervous about the statue here. This is just the way that I connect with my God. You see, but you just witnessed. I gave you a sign. I told you something that only you would have known. Different situations are then conveyed. It could be a loved one. It could be a family member. It could be a spouse. It could be a neighbor. It could be someone that you really trust, a prophet, a preacher, a teacher, a loved one, somebody who says, look, this is the way that we should worship. And if it doesn't line up with this, though we or an angel from heaven teach you another Torah other than, you know, you ought to go, whoa. If they say, look, this place has great children's programs. The music is uplifting. The worship is very good, but it's not according to these words. Be careful. Go to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. In verse 29, this is the farewell of farewell, basically. At this point, Moses has already concluded the scroll of the Torah. He rolled it up, gave it to the Levites, told them to keep it metzad in the side of the ark. And he tells them this, for I know that after my death you will surely become corrupted. That's the same word that was used when they were on the mountain. Remember he said, your people have become corrupt, ruined. And turn aside. I know that after my death you will surely become corrupted and turn aside from the way which I commanded you. Evil will befall you in the latter days because you will do evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. It has to do with idolatry. It has to do with making a god. Making a god. I can leave it right there. I don't care how you make a god. If you make a god in your mind, if you make a god, and if you have made God, you've messed up. That's why Deuteronomy, Moses' first person account. Look, once they made the molten image, once they made God, it doesn't matter if they kissed it or sacrificed chickens to it. None of that matters. It matters. It's bad. Let me make sure I get. But it's already a grave offense. You've already made another God. What you do there only makes it worse. You've already done bad enough. Now, this happened quick. We're talking 40 days, roughly. Say, let's call it 2 months. After all of this, after the giving of the Torah, the question is how. Something just doesn't make sense. Go back with me to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. Chapter 19, verse 1 of Exodus. In the third month after the children of Israel were gone out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai, for they had departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai, had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and Jehovah called to him out of the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, tell the children of Israel, you've seen what I did to Egypt, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will listen to my voice indeed and guard my covenant, then you shall be my own treasure from among all the people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Moses came and called for the elders and laid before them all these words which Jehovah had commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, what do you think they said? It's what they always say. And the Lord, all that the Lord has spoken will do it. Oh, they're quick. Look, the children of Israel in the Torah and throughout the Scripture are quick to say they're going to do it. We'll do it. Everything he said, we'll do it. We will do. But did you notice verse 5, the pattern that God says? Verse 5, now therefore, if you will listen to my voice indeed and guard my covenant. Listen and guard. And they said, we'll do it. If you will listen and guard, we'll do it. We'll do it. Now go to chapter 20 of Exodus 19. Verse 16, or I think it's verse 20 in the English. And they said to Moses, speak with us, you speak with us and we'll listen. But let God not speak with us, lest we die. You speak, we'll listen. Chapter 24, verse 3 said, we'll do it. Just like chapter Exodus 19 and verse 8, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it. Chapter 24, verse 3, we'll do it. Chapter 24, verse 7, we'll do it even before we hear it. That's how faithful we are. I propose that this led to the problem. First off, it wasn't true. First off, it was a lie. You can say, well, you're being a little harsh. I'm just telling you what the Scripture says. They said they would do it. They didn't do it. That's what Scripture says. So the first problem is, it wasn't true. Now, it sounds good to say, we'll do it before we even hear it. It makes for a good midrash. It really does. It's, you know, it comes across pretty, you know, because you go, they were so trusting in God that they said they would do it before they even heard it. But you know what anybody who reads the story says? Yeah, but that's not what they did. Yeah, but I know, but I mean, that. Work with me here. It's not what they did. It doesn't work out. Now, the discovery of what went wrong is found in Deuteronomy. Now, I've covered in previous classes on this, and it's fully covered in my book. Does everyone have my book? Not yet, because I'm working on it, but it's fully covered. So when it's out, You'll get the full. I'm not going to go into all the details here. I had years ago taught a class called Listen, Learn, Guard, and Do, and I thought I had fully researched this out, but I've learned more. There's much, much more, and this becomes central to not only a path unto righteousness, but a misstep in following the sequence yields dire results. It's bad, bad, bad every time. Because Moses conveys first person a divine process whereby those who follow it can achieve that which they are supposed to achieve. If you deviate from it, you've messed up. Listen, learn, guard, and do. I want you to listen to me. There are 31 examples in Deuteronomy alone, 31 examples of a combination of these words in order, and the chances of that are beyond chance. Like, I don't know the math. Maybe Mr. Tyler, my friend, can do some stats on this. But 31 times in Deuteronomy, and the order is consistent. In other words, if you use four words, they're always in that order. If you use three words, they're in order. If you use two words, they're in order. I'm just going to read this to you just so you get what I'm talking about. Two verses in Deuteronomy use these four words: listen, learn, guard, do. All four, those two verses, they're both in that same order. Listen, learn, guard, do. All right? Listen, learn, do. And you don't have to write, this will be in my book, so if you want to just wait, it'll be in there. Page 145, I think. Listen, learn, do, one time. Listen, guard, do. See the order? It's right. Seven times, listen, guard, do. All seven, all in order. Whenever learn, guard, and do are used, it's once in order. Listen and learn, two times. Listen and guard, two times. Learn and do, nine times. Learn and do. Guard and do, eight times. Now get this. Whenever the word Shema and Asa, Shema means to listen or to hear, and Asa is do, anytime those are used together, it's 18 times in Deuteronomy. And guess what comes first? Listen. Shema, Asa. Listen and do. Hear and do. Never, never in the Torah that God gave Moses do we have God or Moses commanding people to do something before they listen. Because you're not prepared. You ever tell somebody, like you're telling a child, hey, I need you to run over here, and they start running. You're like, whoa, hold on, listen to me first. Listen, where are you going? I didn't even finish telling you what I need you to do. Listen, I need you to go do this, do it this way, and then come back, okay? Thank you. You know, like if they just taken off doing whatever, well, the children of Israel said, we're going to do it before we even listen. Well, that sounds great, except it didn't happen. It didn't happen because the order violates Torah. Now, I want you to go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30. And verse 11. Deuteronomy chapter 30. For this commandment which I command you this day, it's not hidden from you, neither is it far off. It's not in heaven that you should say, who will go up to heaven for us and bring it to us? Listen, that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? You catch the order, hear and do. But the word is very near to you. It's in your mouth and in your heart that you may do it. The point is, okay, we're supposed to hear it and do it. How are we going to do that? And the message is, well, it's not in heaven. I mean, it's not beyond the sea that you have to get somebody to go get it and bring it, that you may hear it and do it. It's not in heaven that you have to say, go get it and bring it down for us so we may hear it and do it. Not beyond the sea. It's not in another land. How are you going to do this? How are you going to follow the right order and not deviate from the plan which is laid forth by Jehovah? It's very near to you. It's in your mouth and in your heart. That's how you do it. Now, you have to have it not just in your mouth. Having it in your mouth is, I'm Torah faithful. I follow the Torah. I'll do it. I'll do it before I even listen. I don't want you to do it before you listen. I want you to listen. I want you to listen first. I want you to learn it. I want you to learn to guard it. Then do. Look with me. Let me show you how this is a problem. Isaiah 29 and verse 13. And Jehovah said, since this people draw near with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear towards me is a commandment of men learned by rote. Therefore, behold, I will do a marvelous work among the people, even a marvelous work and a wonder, for the wisdom of their wise shall perish, and the understanding of the prudent men shall be hid. Look, because they've done this mouth thing and not their heart, their heart's far from me, their mouth. By the way, this is also in Jeremiah chapter 12. He says, because their mouth is near to me, they talk a good game, but their heart is far from me, even their wise and prudent men, what God wants is people who have it in their mouth and in their heart. Because if you have it in your mouth and your heart, that's how you hear it and do it. It has to be an internal voice that says, like Isaiah 30, walk in this way. I heard a voice behind me saying, walk this way. Look, don't just do it as the popular sports shoe marketing group would have you do. You know, the famous swish, just do it. That's what got him in trouble. No, don't just do. Listen. Listen first. Learn. After you listen, you have to learn it. Then you have to guard. Now, what does guard mean? Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Then do it. A lot of people spend a lot of time doing things that are added to or taken from. Things that deviate from the path. Their focus is not on the actual word of Jehovah. So if you're doing something which is not part of the you see the point. You have to listen, learn, guard, and do. Put these words in your mouth and in your heart. And let's not be stiff-necked anymore. Look, religious leaders sometimes lead people astray. In this story, the greatest rebellion, the highest religious authority led people astray. In the most grave offense to the Creator, shortly after he had manifested his power to an entire assembled nation. The head guy leads them into idolatry. There are religions today which are telling people that the same God of the Hebrew Bible is represented in a statue. People pray to these statues, or they direct their spiritual energy or their focus or however they want to put it, but they associate the God of all creation with a statue. That is an offense to the God of all creation, who is not represented in any form. Family and friends can sometimes encourage us to participate in these events and things that they just don't fit what the Bible describes. But they have good music. They have a good children's program. I mean, I'm just saying. Some will try to tell you that another God is God. Sometimes religious showmen will read you like a book. They might even perform miracles. The Bible doesn't say, the Torah doesn't say that miracles don't always, I mean, it could happen. And that might entice, you might say, well, look, I mean, I had this problem, and now because of this, I'm drawn, I'm healed. I was praying for money, and a check came in the mail, and this guy told me that would happen, and so I'm going to go with it. Look, there are tests that are presented to us, and we have to be guarded. Deuteronomy says over and over and over, guard your soul. Guard these words, guard your soul. Guard, guard, guard. Don't fall for it. I don't care who tries to entice you. We have to be vigilant. We have to be willing to stand against the grain. If those children of Israel, the chosen nation, the Segulah, the ones who witnessed these things, if they were making an idol while the ink was still wet, we ought to really be careful. Shabbat Shalom.